Riley's lived on the corner, and Jim Hamley had Tom Pollock had 100 acres back in there, and then Jim Hamley had 200 on the corner, on the other corner, on the south side of the road. Well, then there was Charlie Jackson on the south side, and then the farm, and it had 50 acres of bush, and they cut that out. I think it was about 1903 or 4 that they cut that bush out.
That was the second farm on the south side.
I was on the south side.
Down the bottom of the hill.
Hmm?
At the bottom of the hill?
Well, yes, and then run up, and then our farm was next. There was one field on top of the hill, and Bob Sturgeon built there. And then on the other side, well, do you want to go right down to Steele's Corner on that?
Right,
sir. Well, then ours was the next farm. And then Ritchie Farm. Well, then Max Sturgeon had 50 acres there next to the Ritchies, and Ed Neshaw had the other 50. And so that was right down to the number 11 highway or Penetang Road.
Might as well go on farther, right down on the south side.
Well, then Wesley Neshaw had the farm there on the corner, and Steele's, that's Billy Steele, owned that where gardeners were. And then there was the Bell place below that. And darned if I can think of who was on that next place. Frank Bateman was on it. Well, then there was 50 acres there that Bateman's had. Well, then there was the Gibbonses. And that took you down to the 20 side road, didn't it?
Maybe 20, yeah.
And, then below 20 side road was Fiddler North, well. Was below there. Well, then from there down was more or less swampy.
Wouldn't be much road down there.
No. Well, then you start on the other side, back at 10 side road. You got Gardner's and Riley's.
Yeah.
Well, then there was Moriarty, Jimmy Moriarty. Well, there was 250s there, and the next one was Harry and Johnny. Well, then Tannehill Sturgeon lived on top of the hill.
Or Norbert.
Yeah, and Johnny and Harry bought that from Harry Moriarty, or from Tannehill Sturgeon. Well, then the next was the Sturgeon property. Well, then the next was Johnny Ritchie.
That's where Lynn was with you.
Yeah. And then there was Bill Neshaw. And across the road from that was Bob Brown. Well, then the next was Fred Brown. And the next was Bill Bateman. The next was Paul West. And the next was the Nesbitt girls, two old maids, and they run that farm. And then across the road from that was Tom Nesbitt.
That'd be in the northeast corner.
Yeah. Well, then there was nothing, just more or less swampy, marshy land below, from there down to the bay. Dean Nesbitt's farm first, down there, Dolph Neshaw, and then it was Billy Nesbitt.
Where Ernie Hughes is.
And then it was Jim Hughes.
Where? On the corner.
Yeah. Well, then it was Bethel Sawyer.
That's where Herbie is.
Yeah. And then it was Gilt Sawyer.
And the Gervin's father?
Hmm? Yeah. Yes, Gervin's father. And then it was the... Oh, Lordy. The boy got struck with lightning. McGee. McGee lived down there next to that. Well, then there's the Whitelock place.
That's where the orchard of Rathwell was.
No, it was next.
It was next on the corner.
Yeah. And then across the corner was the Mattingly. Tom Blaine.
That's in Guilford.
Yes. Well, then there was the Guilford store and the station and all that stuff. Well, there was a little house below the station. And that changed hands frequently. Well, then there was practically nothing, mostly pasture ground from that down to the lake. And coming up on the other side, it came up to Lou Neely's, practically. Pasture land, one thing and another. And then Paul West had, I guess, 50 acres there where the school is and all that. And, then there was the Sawyers. See, it came down and took three lots there to make 100 acres. And, then there was Fennel's Corn.
They lived up on the hill then?
Yep. Well, then there was Fennel's Corners. And, the Harts had 50 acres there.
That'd be on the west side of 11.
Yep. And he died in here. Freeman. That took him down into the swamp. So there was Andy Matchett.
Was that where kells are? Oh no, that'd be down near the swamp.
That's right just above the swamp. It was all swamp. There was nothing cleared down in there at that time. That was cleared later on. And then Robert Bateman. That's where Roy Bell bought. And when he came down from Elmville. And then there was Taus Bateman, had 50 acres there where Harold is, Harold Bell. And then there was the Kells. Before the Kells, there was Frank Sawyer, where he's on the corner there.
Where Keith Kell is now.
Yeah. And then across the road was Patfield place. Well, then there was George Neshaw. And then there was Harry Hughes. And Mattinley's. No.
Corner then.
No, Mattinley's. It's not Mattinley's.
No.
It's.
Were there any farms past the corner?
Yeah, Frank Steele.
That was where. That would be where the golf course is now then.
Is it? I don't know.
Well, on the north side.
Yeah.
The golf course would be on part of that farm anyway. That was the last farm, right?
Yes. Well, the rest below that was more or less pasture land. Todd's, they owned 400 acres in there.
East of?
East of
number 11.
And the, the Kells were west. I've got that Rathfolds. That's on that corner.
Oh, yeah. On the corner of the town line.
Yeah. And, well, then the Todds, I guess they owned more, really more. They owned 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, then Sherman, no, not Sherman, but I can't think of his name. He lives across the 20 Side Road on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was Sam Coulter below that. And on the other side was Joe Todd.
That'd be on the north side.
Yeah. On the south side of the road was Joe Todd. And we went down there, I think all down there, yeah, we did. So that was pretty much, then when you went north of that, well, I just knew the odd one.
Well, Joe Todd's would be the last farm before he run down into the marsh again.
Yeah, yeah.
John Lombard, and Dickie Jackson, they had 50 acres each there. Well, then Lombard had the next 100 east. And then up on top of the hill, that farm changed hands so fast sometimes you couldn't keep track of it. And we had rented one fall for pasture down below the hill. Jake Pearson had that too at one time. And then Fred Beatty had it. Well, then the next farm east of that was ours. Well, then the duck place.
That was on the corner of number 11.
Yeah. And, well, then you crossed the road. That was Jim Curry. And Ed Neeshaw bought it from Jim Curry. Well, then the next was Bell's, the old home place. And then Willie John Dale's. And Gibbons's. And then it was across the road, it was Gibbons again.
Gibbons were on both sides of 27th Road.
Yeah. And then I don't think there was anything below them.
Down
to the marsh. Yeah. There would be another farm in there. I expect because across the road, there'd be a farm right across the road from it.
That'd be getting down above the railroad.
That is getting down below the railroad.
Below the railroad.
Yeah. And, so, see, the railroad went through the Gibbons farms there. And,
well, then there wouldn't be anything. There'd be marsh down in there.
There's marsh, yeah.
And then on the south side back, it's far back.
Now, I had that name a minute ago, Barker's. Was across the road, it was the 10th lot across the other side of the road.
Across from the school.
Yeah. Now then, it was Lou Bateman at one time, and Lou, that's where Walter Neely was. He bought Lou Bateman out. Well, Lou Bateman moved down there to Botchtown, where Dick Thorpe was. And, then the next was Metcalf. Well, then that other farm, the Jimmy Moriarty bought it. The next one above that. And that's the first owner that I can tell you about. Well, then there was the Cronins. And then you're down to the highway now.
The Cronins were on the corner of the highway, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, then across the road, that was Reuben Tyndall. That is the old Tyndall home place. And then across from that, the Batemans, they had 200 acres there. They came from out near Keswick. That was Tom Bateman. And then below them, now I'm not. Well, I think that's it down to the marsh, the nearest. On the, which.
And the east side of the sand hill?
Yeah, east side of the sand hill. Well, there was Joe Metcalf on the north side. And Oh, my thinker. Is it gone? Thompson. Frank. William Neshaw.
Which William was that?
Hmm?
What William?
Big Bill.
Big Bill.
Yep. And then that farm in there, it was changed hands, and darned if I know who owned that. Well, then there was O'Neill's.
On the corner of number 11?
Yep. Well, then, across the road was Tom McAfee. And Tom McAfee. Stewart's.
And it was a real hot Sunday. And there was this one was dozing and that one was dozing. Finally, he used for an illustration in his sermon. He said, "All the timbers that's in a barn that I would hate to be is a sleeper. By God, he wakened them up." And that was getting on pretty well. The last, he's Sam Neely's grandfather. Yes. And she was at our place, I think, pretty near as much as she was at home. She and Gertie were about the same age.
Was it, which one was it that liked the sugar in his tea?
No, not that. James, if I can name that fella. But they were at our place, both the ministers were at our place that night for supper. And he'd always pass his cup back for another spoon of sugar. And the young man said, "Fill his cup up pretty well with sugar." And then when he passes it back for more sugar, for another spoonful of sugar, there'll be, it'll heap up. My mother done it. And he passed his cup back. And I kind of think that was the Reverend Lamb. I'm not sure. And when she put the other spoonful of sugar on, it was heaped up. And he just looked at, he says, "That's yours." He says, "That's a good lesson." So after that, he tasted his tea before he asked for another spoonful of sugar. And all there used to be some great tricks played on one mother. One night, Walter Madden, he was at our place, and we had watermelons, any amount of them. And he was very fond of one. So, Yurt and I went out and we got the biggest one we could find. And we put it in a bag and tied it to the crossbar. And thought that he wouldn't be able to ride home with that big watermelon there. He got it home. And we had, we called him, sugar something. Madden, not Madden. He come from up Mansfield way. You knew him. He married Ruth and girl. new land. Or whether the frost hit them or what, but he had a mammoth crop of vines. And Tom took somebody back to show him his pumpkins. And he says, well, Tom, you have a wonderful crop of vines, but where's the pumpkins? Well, he says, they were the buggers up trailing them around.
Yeah,
all different things. Well, Lumbar, he was the one that got rid of that horse, and I was in on that. Old John, you know, he seemed to take a liking to me for some reason or other. And I know one day he had a great big colt. Oh, she weighed 1,800. And we had two colts out. But that big brute, she'd come up and she didn't bother jumping the fence, she just pushed it down. So she landed up to our place, and so I took her in and I tied her up, because she would push another fence down just as quick as the one she came in through. So John came up and I was plowing right back in that backfield. And he says, and did you see that big colt of mine? I said, yes, I did. And he says, where is she now? Is she tied up there in the strip? I said, she can push fences down faster than I can fix them. And I said, you don't take her home. I said, I'm going to put her to work tomorrow. He said, good day. That was the end of John. And I had to look all night putting her to get a collar big enough to fit her. So the next morning, I drove her around a bit, and we had 7 horses. I only had 3. York had 4 and I had 3, and we had them on 2 kid kangaroo plows. So I took her out and I put her in one from the outside. And tied her well to the other horses, and well, she had to go. So I plowed her that forenoon. Well, I tied her up, left her in the stable at noon, and went back to 3. Well, the next morning, I hitched her up and I put her out on the plowing. There were 4 horses, you had to put one out on the plowing. I plowed her all day. And we got done our fall work. We were short that one horse. So, after, we kept her, I guess, maybe till sometime in December. And so I got on her back one day and went home, took her home. And John said, did you make a good job of her? Well, I said, we can drive her anyway. He says, you go out and hitch her up. He says, I'd like to see her go. Well, the beggar, he wanted some wood up from the bush. So, hitched her up, hitched to the sleighs, and way back we went. We brought up 3 loads of wood that afternoon. And I says, you're the cutest devil, I says, bar nothing in the whole community. I says, you can get what you want pretty cheap. Well, he says, you didn't make a bad job of breaking her in. And that went on, and all different things. Well, then, I don't know how I come to be down there. See, they were on the 13th way down there, you know, where the Hall of School was. And he had that.
They were on the northeast corner there, right?
Yeah, in the northeast corner. And he had 150 acres there. And, anyway, I can't think of the name of the horse buyer. No, it wasn't Abe. No, it was one ahead of him, and as crooked as a snake. Not any crooked than old John, when he wanted to be crooked. And he had this, a blind jack. And he came in to see this horse. He says, I can't possibly go right now. He says, I've to meet a fellow up at the top of the hill. He's bringing me a bunch of cattle today. Well, they said they'd go up and they'd bring the cattle down. Well, that's all. He was fortunate enough that he knew all this. And he says, you go out and put that horse on the shank. And he says, trot him around there quite a bit. So I did. Came back and the horse was as nimble as a kitten. So, anyway, they came back and they waited up there for about an hour. The cattle never come. They weren't coming anyway. There was no cattle coming. But then he wanted to see this horse. So John said, bring that horse up. And so I brought the horse up. Now he says, what kind of a horse is this? Ah, John says, he's no damn good. Well, he was an awful nice looking horse. And, of course, that was... And John sold him for $150 to him that day. And, by golly, came back, but missed one day and came back again. And I was down there again. Well, the old man was sick and I was helping him or what, I don't know, but... He came back and he was going to return that horse. Oh, John says, now look, if you think you're going to get your money back, you're sadly mistaken. Well, he says, $100 guarantees the horse. He says, it don't guarantee that one. He says, didn't you ask me what kind of a horse it was? He says, yes. And he said, I told you he was no damn good. So now he says, go on and sue, do anything you like. He says, Nisha was here to witness it. Well, golly, I can't think of that junior's name. But he didn't come back to old John. But that man done some awful things one time or another. And, but, you know...
What the Lombard produced, huh?
Well, John Lombard married Rhoda Nisha. John Lombard's son married Rhoda Nisha. That's how close we were related. Well, Rhoda Nisha was Frank Nisha's, I don't know whether, I think she was the third girl. I think it was Annie, and Mrs. Dick Thorpe, and then Tori, Mrs. White now. It was Tori, the second girl that Lombard married. And Rhoda married Sawyer, and they were out west.
Lombard?
And Sawyer's, yeah. And they were out of kind of, around, close to kind of. And in 1916, when I went out west for the harvest, we stopped in there. And, that was the... And, well, then Laura Black, she married Wilson Black. And that's how we're connected with the Blacks in Stroud. And what Blacks there are there now, I don't know.
Wilson, I
don't know. It's electrician up there. Well, that's what Edgar Surgeon told me. And now whether there's any more than that or not, I don't know. Well, I expect there will be. And, well, then there's the Hughes. And see, Ed Hughes was a first cousin. And he married Annie Ritchie. And I know one day I was up at Hunter's getting some chickens. And I signed the check. And this chap says, it could be that you and I are related. My wife says, if your name's Bill Hughes, we are related. And he says, that's who you're talking to. Well, I said, your dad and I were first cousins. And then Bill, he went into show horses, four horse and six horse teams, the Perchins. And he has a son, Edgar. And the last I seen them was down at Bay Royal. And of course I wasn't neighbors near them. But Edgar was driving their six-horse team. And Bill was driving Beatty's six-horse team. They had a six-horse team, persons, and they were, Bill was driving them, and why he was driving them, I don't know. But that was the day that we spent the day with, I spent the day with Clarence Watson. And he was a wonderful man to spend the day with. Doug Hughes was Frank Hughes' son. That's out on the second line there. Well, he's the sister of Gervin Sawyer, Mrs. Gervin Sawyer. And there, Ed Hughes and Frank were brothers. There was Frank, and Harry was the oldest, or then Frank, and then Ed, and Wes, and Bill, and Eveline. That was the family there. Albert, Charlie, Bill, Wallace, and Jack. And Florence and Annie. Florence was Mrs. Hughes, Mrs. Hamley. Mrs. Frank Hamley. And I don't know who Florrie got married, but she got married to her. I don't know who she got married. No, Addie, I mean. Now, Florrie was Mrs. Hamley. Addie's mother. And there was Addie and John and Sam. And Sam, now he's, I think, in Winnipeg. And he married the oldest Bateman girl. And what's her name? I knew her.
Jim's sister?
Yeah, Jim's sister.
She married John Cobain.
John Cobain? Oh. Give it to them, because what you don't want too